Have you ever met someone and thought their job sounded cool? Or perhaps you're wondering how you can get to a position that doesn't seem to match any of the qualifications you have at the moment? Well, if so, this podcast is for you.
We found some people with jobs that you might not necessarily know about or expect people to have, and we're going to ask them about how they got there.
Welcome to What Do They Do? A podcast about jobs and how people got them. Hi everyone, and welcome to this special episode of What Do They Do? In this episode, we're going to recap season one of our podcast, where we look back on the six different interviews that took place and try to identify some different themes. Now, we have listened back to them, and we did identify some themes, which is good. It means we've got something to talk about today, and we're going to go through them today before we jump into our second season, which will be starting in early January 2021.
Yeah, so the themes that kind of kept on coming up that we are going to talk about is imposter syndrome, network, so building your network. We've got kind of that key person who might have inspired you at some point along the journey, and then a little bit about qualifications, and we'll talk a bit more about that in a moment.
So let's dive right in and start with the first one, which is imposter syndrome. Ben, how would you define imposter syndrome?
It's been really, I've talked about it lots in the past. And actually, I think you and I have talked about it a lot in different scenarios, particularly around like the work we used to do around presenting and like doing training, like the standing up in front of people in like what on earth am I the person who gets to stand up and talk to these people? So I just used to think of it as like, how am I still getting away with this? Surely I'm going to get found out at some point. But it's interesting in this the interviews we've done, and it came up in particular with Caitlin and Imogen, was a doubt of whether you are the right fit for a role, even though everyone else seems to think that you are. But I've come around to thinking, like, is it a necessary part of the way that we're made up? Because you know, it keeps you striving harder if you do have a bit of self-doubt. I haven't answered your question at all about a definition, but I suppose it's that self-doubt that maybe doesn't have basis if you were to speak to anyone else.
Yeah, I think it is really hard to... I think it's probably different for everybody. And so if I look at Wikipedia, the best source on the internet...
And there's no other place to look.
Imposter syndrome is a psychological pattern in which an individual doubts their skills, talents, or accomplishments and has a persistent internalized fear of being exposed as a fraud, in inverted commas. And I think this probably feels different for the people that feel it. And it's worth saying it's not necessarily a real syndrome as such, but that's just the name that's been coined for it. And I think that this feeling can kind of come and go in waves as well, maybe depending on the project that you're working on or the team that you're in, how long you've been somewhere, even just the way that you are feeling that day. I think this feeling can probably be relatively well linked to your mental health in general and whether you're feeling good or maybe having a low day. But I've certainly felt this through my career, if you can call it that, for different reasons, I guess. But I think for me, one of the important things is being aware that it's there. And also just kind of giving yourself permission not to know everything. It's impossible that you're going to know everything that you need to know to get your job done. You know, you're always going to be hopefully challenging yourself and learning new things as you work on different projects or work with new teams. And I think it is that inherent thing, like what you just said, Ben, where maybe this is essential to how we operate in some way. You know, as humans, we do tend to compare ourselves to other people. And really, the only thing that you should do is compare yourself to you in the past.
Because it came up in your interview with Caitlin, which happened... When did you conduct your interview with Caitlin?
Just over a year ago, so late 2019.
In person, right?
In person, yeah.
In the same room. And during that interview with Caitlin, she talked about it in the context of, I think it was when she was headhunted for a role and she felt that like they maybe got the wrong end of the stick. Like, why on earth were they, did they seem to think that she would be suitable for the role? And if I remember correctly, it felt like she was not really going to pursue it because she wasn't the right fit. But in conversation with someone else, they called her out on her imposter syndrome and said, well, why wouldn't you be a candidate for it? And also kind of linking in with themes that come up of like, what's the worst that could happen? Kind of fighting that. So for her, it sounded like having that conversation with someone else who knows her and is aware of her skill set. They were able to get her over kind of missing out on the opportunity and kind of overcoming the imposter syndrome. Because it's one thing to have it, like have that feeling. But I suppose the next bit is whether it impedes your ability to go on and sort of take opportunities and do what you are actually capable of.
I think that's the key thing is if you recognize that it's there, that's a good step and a good way to make sure then that you understand that's what that feeling is. It isn't that you are not capable or that you are a fraud. It's just an internal mechanism kicking in somewhere to give you some doubt about what you can do, I guess. And then hopefully if you recognize that, you can kind of work through it.
I mean, that's the thing. Without imposter syndrome as a thing, we would just have a lot of incredibly arrogant people strutting around.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, actually, because is the opposite of imposter syndrome arrogance? I'm not sure. And there's a fine line between arrogance and confidence as well. I really look up to people who are able to very confidently talk about their achievements, because you should. You absolutely should share things that you've done well and produced, or, you know, if you're in a creative industry, you have a portfolio of work, you should want to shout from the rooftops about that amazing thing that you did. And I feel like there's maybe a bit of a trait that's quite British in that as well, and being more reserved, and in general, British people not shouting about things, then they find it difficult to hear someone else do it. And so I think we should be careful maybe about saying arrogance is the opposite.
There's also potentially a gender difference as well. So not my own in unique thoughts, but I suppose it's a reference to the book Invisible Women by Caroline Criado Perez, where it talks about like that job interview process and job descriptions, where it would seem that there's a suggestion that when seeing a job description, men are slightly more inclined to say, I've got some of the skills, I can probably figure out the rest. Yeah, I'll give it a go. And women might be more inclined to say, I've got some of the skills, I don't have the other ones, so I won't apply. But then there's also factors of like language in job descriptions, which is kind of explored in the book as well, about like, yeah, language can make a big difference about who applies for a certain job description. And if you tweak it to be more gender neutral, it definitely open up your pool. But because imposter syndrome also came up with Imogen Napper. So to give context, if you haven't listened to Caitlin's episode, Caitlin at the time of interview was working in kind of agile innovation work within a large multinational. She subsequently sort of finished her MBA and gone it alone. She's got a podcast of her own, which we'll put in the links. And yeah, she's sort of now following the path of looking at innovation for businesses. So she's doing pretty well. I don't know what that was about. And then Imogen, who I just mentioned, is a sort of microplastic scientist. She's done some projects around the impact of plastic in our oceans. But she talked about imposter syndrome as well. In terms of her, I think it was sort of presenting your research and kind of speaking as a PhD and not really feeling that she was comparable to the people that she was working with.
Yeah, I remember her talking about being at an event where she was on the bill with two other people that she had looked up to and admired. And so to be speaking alongside them seemed very strange. But I think it's that moment of reflection where you can look back at that and say, actually, I'm there because I've worked bloody hard to be here, right? And now you're getting visibility to that work.
Yeah, it's difficult to kind of, and maybe it is a British thing as well, that I have full faith in everything I'm doing and it's all really amazing. Yes, I'm going to tell everyone about it. That doesn't come across in the right way, or at least didn't when I heard myself say it just then. So yeah, I think imposter syndrome is an interesting one and maybe something we can explore a little bit more. And obviously it particularly came up in those two interviews.
Just to jump back to a point you made a minute ago where you said that Caitlin spoke to a friend who then kind of reminded her, actually, these are all the qualities that you have. These are the things that you can do. Of course, they would headhunt you for this role. I think that kind of moves nicely into one of the other points, which is that key person. You know, in many of the stories that we've listened to, so Caitlin, Lawrence, and Imogen, there has been kind of one person that maybe at the time they didn't realize was pivotal in helping them think about their future or reassuring them that they are capable of the things that they're trying to do. But basically, at some point somewhere, someone either giving them a nudge or consistently over time, that person kind of really cheerleading, if you like, for the work that they were doing, which then had an effect on the journey they ended up taking into the world of work or their career or where their career is finally headed. And listening to them has definitely made me think about who are those people for me. And I think there can be multiple of these one person, if you like, maybe someone when you were at school age, someone at an early point in your career, someone in your current role, perhaps. I don't know about you, Ben. Have you had a think about that? Are there any moments that stand out?
Yeah, I have thought about that a lot in terms of, is there that like pivotal moment or person that kind of was relevant to what went on. I can't pin it down to one. So, because I was thinking, does everyone have that? And for myself, I don't think there's a combination of, you know, a couple of teachers that were good, but I wouldn't say they informed kind of what I went on to do. There's some very pivotal moments with my dad just giving me a look that is seared in my memory forever, you know, and those type of things. So for me, I haven't kind of got that one. I mean, Lawrence's one person was when he was at school and was in the kind of the room where you get sent if you're not necessarily toeing the line, and someone that showed him respect and that he had respect for, who showed a bit of belief and kind of laid down a few things, a few home truths in terms he could really get on board with. That kind of gave him a bit of belief in himself. So I wonder whether that, if we could maybe back to imposter syndrome, at those moments you were talking about, where those moments when you're not feeling on top form, if you coincide that with the person that you respect who can give you a little bit of a nudge in the right direction, that those factors can come together.
Yeah, I think if you're listening now, it's probably good to take a moment to reflect on the journey that you've had. If you're feeling a bit of that imposter syndrome, perhaps you've just taken on some new responsibility, for example, and someone has seen something in you to give you that responsibility and they believe that you can do it. And hopefully, if you can reflect on that, that will give you your own self-belief that you're able then to actually do it. And it might be that for that new responsibility, you need to learn some new skills. And that's just going to take time, because a lot of these things are soft skills that just take practice, especially if you're taking a step up in a current role.
I was going to say, if you talk about a skill set, there was a keynote that I saw that kind of opened my world to design thinking, which has definitely taken me in a different direction. So watching them talk about that, I suppose that would be a kind of moment. And actually that came with, after they'd done the keynote, you know, when you see a good keynote, you're like, oh, this person is inspirational. And I found him later sitting in a corridor, just like working on something, and went, hi. Turns out he actually knew who I was, which is a bit of a bonus as well. But I think there's maybe that other bit as well, because Imogen, there was a particular person, a professor that she reached out to, and then I think got a response several months later out of the blue. And I think that was someone she compared herself to and thought, well, I'm not in that league. But that being able to form a bit more of a relationship with that person is a catalyst to kind of them saying, no, yeah, I who you had lots of respect for, believe in you, and that gives you the boost.
Yeah, and I think That's really closely linked to one of the other topics that we've found through all of these conversations so far, which is having a network. And even if you don't formally go to an event to network, which I'm not even sure whether how that's happening in COVID, it's really difficult to do a video call because only one person can speak at once. But having a network of people that you can turn to that are within the circle that you are operating within, like within the industry, for example, I think one thing that is positive and that I always try to do, and it can be very difficult, but I try to think about how can I help create a network for people, or how can I be a part of that network? Because as you move forward in your career, someone is probably looking up thinking, oh, I would like to be doing that. And so is there a way that you can help them in that way, for example, that professor you mentioned did come back to Imogen, albeit months later, he clearly wanted to help and had something for her. And actually that kind of helped drive the direction of her work and opened up some doors into new projects and new research, for example.
Yeah, because in terms of network, so Jem, she introduced me, because it introduced both of us to the phrase, your network is your net worth.
Yeah.
And Jem is probably the best example we've had on of someone who really has a thriving network that allows her, like, she's worth connecting to on a number of levels, because she's got people all over the world that she connects with all the time, and her network is so strong.
And Jem operates in a number of different areas. So she's kind of got her job, she has a kind of small business that she's running on the side, and what fascinates me about her network is how multifaceted it is, and that it's not just focused on one particular area of work or one particular set of knowledge. It's actually surrounding yourself with people that are outside of that circle too, but just networking with them because it's useful for a mentorship, like mutual mentorship in a way, and being able to talk to people. But Jem is always the person that I turn to. I work with her. If I'm like, do you know someone who does this? Because 9 times out of 10, Jem probably will know someone somewhere, or she'll know someone that knows someone that does the thing that you're looking for. And it's made me think about that as well, and think, who is in my network? What does my network look like? How can I expand that network or meet or talk to more people? I think through 2020, this is probably pretty difficult to do. But what I would say is I find that most people are pretty open. Like if you send them a message, they might be super busy, like Imogen's professor as an example, but eventually they might come back to you.
It's also like, obviously you work with Jem, and if you were to purely work with her on a professional level only and just focus on that, you know, the work that she does in the role where you know her, you wouldn't necessarily end up discovering that she runs TribeQuest?
Tribe Dash.
I've name dropped a different one. Tribe Dash, where she takes groups of people across the world on trips, or that she's kind of got a few voiceovers out there as well. And I suppose it does start to bring us into our fourth theme of qualifications, in that we spoke to a lot of people who have a main job or role, but that by no means gets anywhere near to kind of all the different things they do. When I spoke to Sam towards the beginning of season one, he had gone through various different roles in surf magazines and doing user experience design for touchscreen DVDs back in the day, which actually eventually led him to creating an accessibility tool. And he's sort of now moving on to a few new ideas. And, you know, the qualifications he had don't necessarily relate directly to what he's gone on to do. And he also surfs as well, for reference, all these different skill sets people have. And it's interesting to kind of connect those together.
I think one assumption I had coming into creating this podcast and getting to meet amazing people was that you don't necessarily need the qualifications that line up with your career for the most part, I think that has proven true. Even when we've spoken to people where their career has been a more linear trajectory from their university course, perhaps upwards, they have maybe moved into an area that they've discovered that they like through the work that they've been doing. And I think that is just going to be easier and easier to do as time goes on. And it gives me hope in a way, because I think it means that we can make education hopefully a bit more flexible when you're younger. There doesn't necessarily need to be a focus on learning a subject to take you to work, which I don't think is massively there right now. But I hope that it will start giving people permission just to try new things when it comes to being at school and teaching and learning. Because it's the soft skills that are going to be really important, or so-called soft skills that are going to be really important as you try and shift from kind of one company to another, or one career type to another, one job ladder to another, et cetera.
And I think that trajectory into adjusting your skills has been accelerated in 2020. A lot of the things that were kind of, you know, trends that were coming anyway, have been vastly accelerated. So those skill sets, I mean, when we talked to Imogen, who went on to get a PhD and sort of published lots of research around plastics in the ocean, she didn't profess to be like a sort of A stars across the board in the science subjects at school. It was more around her interest in beaches, spotting that there was pollution, and that, you know, that passion that she had for sort of keeping a beach clean and wanting to understand why on earth there's so much plastic on it. That passion led her to then excel in her field, where maybe that wasn't wrapped up into the, you know, smashing the qualifications at school. So I think that's one for a theme I kind of really interested in is when that spark ignites. And something we'll try and maybe explore in season two is that link of the learning of skills, but then when does that kind of link with some passion area and kind of really go next level?
I was just thinking, it's really interesting that you mentioned passion, because I feel like from the interviews that we've already recorded for the next season, that feels like a topic that's already coming out, and I don't want to give too much away. I think this is really good to catch up just before Christmas as a little Christmas special to drop into your ears before the new year.
Yeah, that pre-Christmas work, or is this a good podcast length for the walk after a large Christmas dinner?
I think either. Maybe you need to listen to it twice just to go back over the ideas. But in the new year, early January, we'll start with our second season of podcasts. Our first guest is going to be Amy Trigg, an actor based in the UK, who recently won the Women's Playwriting Award too. And she'll discuss some of her writing in that interview that we did with her a little bit earlier this year, mid-pandemic. So I'm really excited to get another set of interviews out there in the world so that you can hear about people's stories and find out what do they do. Be that nosy person when you're speaking to someone at an event and you want to find out more about that job. It kind of sounds cool, but you know that maybe you wouldn't do it yourself, or maybe a job that you've never heard of.
Can't wait. Yeah, I think there's some good ones coming, and we've got hopefully some really interesting podcasts for you to while away, and not a commute anymore, but those bits of time, definitely get out for a walk.
I'm still doing a commute. I don't know about you. It's about 15 seconds long, but it's still a commute.
Mine can be quicker if I slip on the stairs. Yeah. I always thought, oh, well, now I'm working from home all the time. I'll just like, you know, put the music on or put a podcast on the background. But it gets interjected by regular video calls. So yeah, carving out that time. That's why getting out for a walk and actually moving, because my step count at some days this year is literally 13 steps down the stairs and 13 steps up.
Well, after the second season, we will finish with a wrap-up podcast where we go for a walk together and we can record the walk then.
Well, and I can like do dog voices. No, is that not
that's the wrong podcast.
Oh, damn it. Awesome. Can't wait. Yeah.
All right. See you all in January.